Hey, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, this has been an exciting, March was an exciting month because it was the month of my fourth anniversary. And I want to thank all of you who sent me nice messages. I really appreciate it. I had a lot of fun. And my special guests, of course, were Tasha Alexander and Andrew Grant. They were just wonderful. And I really appreciate that they spent my anniversary day with me. So it was lots of fun. Now, I have a very special guest today. She's been on before, and the reason I invited her back is that yesterday was Debbie Reynolds' birthday. And, I am still very moved that Debbie Reynolds called the program a few days before she died to wish all of my listeners a Happy New Year. Of course, it was such a shocking loss for all of us. And Debbie Reynolds has been actually a big part of my life because from the time I was a little girl, my mother used to wake us up singing, "Good morning, good morning." And so I think I would like to start doing that first because our guest is going to be Dorian Hannaway, and we're going to talk about the two books that she wrote with Debbie. So let's hear that song.
Good morning, we've talked the whole night through.
Good morning
to you. Good morning, it's great to stay up late.
Good morning to you.
When the band began to play, the stars were shining bright. Now the milkman's on his way, it's too late to say goodnight. So good morning, sunbeam.
Good morning to you and you and you and you. Good morning, we've gabbed the whole night through. Good morning to you.
Nothing could be grander than to be in Louisiana
in the morning, it's great to stay up late. Good morning to
might
you.
Might be just as zippy if we was in Mississippi.
When we left the movie show, the future wasn't bright, but came the dawn.
Thank you.
Hannaway. We're just waiting to get in touch with Dorian Hannaway. And as I said, she is just a delightful woman. And we're going to be talking about Debbie because, as many of you know, I wrote a script for Debbie Reynolds called The Sunshine Pilot. And I was very... it was very heartbreaking for me when she passed away. In 2008, we were scheduled to film Sunshine Pilot here at right here at Exit 44 at Fantasy of Flight. And Kermit Weeks was not only going to allow us to use his lovely airport as our stage for the entire movie, our set. He was also going to fly some of his vintage airplanes for us. So it was really heartbreaking when you know, it just all fell apart because of the financial crisis. So I'm going to play another song, one of my favorite songs, and this is one that also my mother loved, and it's called Tammy. And we'll play that, and I hope that we'll be able to get through to Dorian.
Whispering above, Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love. The old hooty owl, hooty hoos to the dove. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love. Does my lover feel what I feel when he comes near? My heart beats so joyfully, you'd think that he could hear. Wish I knew if he knew what I'm dreaming of. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy.
Sometimes. Well, what? Let me just think for a moment. I had so many things I wanted to talk to her about because, as I said, when Debbie was here, she was here, and we just had such a lovely time, and it was such a heartbreaking thing for me at the time when we had to scrap the whole film deal. That was heartbreaking. And then, of course, when she passed away, it was heartbreaking. as I said, she was so much a part of my life. And when I grew up and listening to her, my mother singing her songs, and then when I had my boys, I woke them up almost every morning the same way, which was nice for them because they were homeschooled, and I didn't have to start singing until about 8 o'clock in the morning. So unlike a lot of kids who have to get up and be out of the house by 6:15, they got to hear me singing. Although of course I don't sing quite as well as Debbie, but I did do it with just about as much enthusiasm. So it was really important for me to honor her. Really, on every April 1st, I want to remember her and remember the joy that she just brought into my life and into my family's life. Because every time, it doesn't matter how many times we've seen Singing in the Rain, we just stop everything and watch it. And as a matter of fact, at one point, we even did some dancing, dancing to that music on stage because we like to, we were on stage a couple times as a family, and so that was one of the songs that we just loved. I don't know what happened. She's in California. We never know. We had somebody once in Oregon, I think, and they overslept. So sometimes people forget the time difference. But anyway, if she calls in, we will be happy to have her on and talk about both books. Last time I spoke about these books. Both of them are just really, really great. I love Unsinkable, a memoir, which is the first book that they wrote together. And then the second book was Make 'em Laugh, and those were short-term memories of longtime friends. And that book is particularly fun because Debbie went through all of her famous Hollywood friends and gave a little snippet, and you can read in the book. And she talks about everybody, and not just not just Eddie Fisher, but she talks about Phyllis Diller and Lana Turner, Katharine Hepburn, Johnny Carson, and all of those people that she worked with and had lots of fun with. If you are ever looking for, you know, sometimes you want to send a gift, or you should send a gift to somebody who's retired, perhaps in a retirement home, these two books are really about the nicest that you can give, because they will bring up memories for seniors who remember those days and who remember these stars. Although, you know, it's funny, so many young people now watch TCM, join the TCM club, and really enjoy these old movies again. So I think that's just a wonderful thing. There's something wonderful about Debbie Reynolds' movie. You find yourself smiling, and you find yourself maybe dancing and singing. But both of these books, and they're available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and they're called Make 'em Laugh, Short-Term Memories of Longtime Friends. And then, of course, Unsinkable, a memoir, which was certainly Debbie, because she had a rough life. She grew up poor, and very poor. And it's amazing what people can do and accomplish in this country if you work hard and you believe in yourself. And she certainly did that. And so I know it was very heartbreaking for her when she lost Carrie, and she just passed away a few days after that. But I do want, again, to tell you, if you are looking for a gift for a senior, you can't go wrong with those two books, because they bring back a lot of fond memories for people. Okay, well, I don't know if she's going to call in, so we will hope that I can book her again another day. But meanwhile, I want to talk again about, I thank you for those of you who sent me messages that you did get, you know, you met the deadline and you sent in your self-published books to Writer's Digest competition. April 1st was the deadline, so if you didn't do it by now, it's too late. But I did appreciate getting these notes from you about how you felt about just trying it, because it's, for many of you, it's the first time that you've actually entered a contest. And I know it's scary, and you don't want to get your hopes up, but you get your hopes up no matter what. But it is, as I said, a wonderful opportunity for you. For all of these Writer's Digest contests, keep an eye on them, because they also have specialty ones like mysteries and sci-fi, poetry, separate from the self-published ones. So keep an eye on the contests there, because all of the contests are really, really helpful to you to grow as a writer, because you get back from them an analysis, and it really helps you to see from a literary agent's point of view what they're looking for, and where you fall in your development stage. They are very honest. If they think you need a lot of work, they tell you, and if they just have some easy suggestions, perhaps a changing of point of view, or just wherever they feel that you are deficient, they will tell you. And so I hope that you continue checking out Writer's Digest frequently. And I don't know, we were hoping. No. Okay. Let me go. Do I have one more Debbie Reynolds song before I end the Debbie Reynolds thing? So let's do that, and then I'll get ready because I do have another guest coming up.
They say you found somebody new, but that won't stop my loving you. I just can't let you walk away. Forget the love I have for you. Guess I could find somebody too, but I don't want no one but you. How could you leave without regret? Am I that easy to forget? Before you leave, be sure you find you want her love much more than mine. 'Cause I'll just say we've never met if I'm that easy to forget. I could find somebody new, but I don't want no one but you. I couldn't leave without regret. You're not that easy to forget. Before you I'll just say we've never met if I'm that easy to forget.
Okay, well, Debbie Reynolds is not easy to forget, and it's wonderful that I've had a chance at least to play her music today, and I will try to book Dorian Hannaway to come back another day and talk about her memories of just being with Debbie and being a good friend and writing the books together. I wanted to ask her particularly about how the auction went, and Debbie Reynolds was a believer in collecting Hollywood memorabilia. She wanted to preserve it because, as she once said, in the early days, they were just throwing things out, just piling them up at the end of a movie and just dumping them. And, of course, some people were smart and picked the stuff up. And she picked up a lot of stuff. She had an amazing collection, which her son Todd put auction, some of it for charity. And so I was interested to see how that turned out, because I hadn't heard. And anyway, I'm sad that I missed Dorian today, but we'll have her back on another day. Now, I want to talk a little bit, again, I have Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who is our legal eagle, is going to be coming in here next week. Again, just if you have a question, please go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com, and fill in the form there, and you can put your question, and Bill will answer it. It's so important. More and more I'm hearing from authors who are doing silly things. That's a simple way to do it. Say it. I mean, some of you are really, really doing silly things. You are sending your materials, your everything, in doc form even. I mean, one of you people sent me your entire book in doc form. I mean, at least, send it in PDF if you're going to send it out to somebody so that they can't just take it. You have to think about what you're doing. When we call it intellectual property, the important word is property. It means it has a value. Property has a value. Just like you have a plot of land, it's got a value. Your words are your property. And they, if you are proud of them, and if you think they're worthy of a book or a movie, then they have value. And you never know what the value is. The value might not be immediate. It might not be, 10 days after you publish your book. It might percolate there. It might build up an audience over years. Someone might come along and read your book. Of course, the one that people are really hoping would read their book is Reese Witherspoon, who is picking up books like Eleanor Oliphant. But you don't know. So your property is valuable. If it's worth publishing, then it has value. So you must not just send it out willy-nilly to anybody who just sends you an email and says, let's we want to make a movie out of your book or something. Don't do it. I don't want to hear any more sob stories from some of you people. You write me and say, well, I sent them money, and them I thought that meant that they were going to do something for me. Well, no, they got the money, and they are sitting around, at the Beverly Hills Hotel, drinking pina coladas because you sent them money. So stop it. I don't know. We'll ask Bill when he's here next week if there is a law against this, because it is really driving me. I thought, when it first started, about 2 years ago, I started getting these emails from you saying, do you think this is real? Do you think this is real? Do you think this is real? That's why I promote Writer's Digest contests or the San Francisco Writers Conference contests, because I know those are legitimate. And there are some state contests and some, specialty contests that you know are legitimate. You can tell if it's legitimate. But if it's just some random things coming through the email, you really have to stop. You have to say, no, I can't do it. I just, I'm not going to send my intellectual property out. And that's that. So, but anyway, if you are in trouble, if you've done something silly, you might want to talk to Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. And he might be able to help you. He might, at least, specifically if you sent money to somebody, there are some laws and stuff that he knows about and I don't know about, but the details. But he might be able to help you get some of your money back. So, again, and this is particularly for you up there in Tarpon Springs. Thank you. I love your work. I love your books. But it's not going to work to send your books out to everybody who sends you an email. Drives me crazy. Now, we have a book buzz. I don't have a time for a book buzz. I'm going to, I'll just talk because I'm waiting for Irene Goodman. And Irene Goodman is a literary agent in New York City, and she was my very first guest 4 years ago. And so I was eager to speak to her and just to thank her so much for her support over the years. And so I'm waiting for her call in. She's in New York. Did you see the temperature in New York? It was like 40 degrees or something this morning. I don't know how people can live up north anymore. When I went to Wisconsin to see my son a few weeks ago, and it was negative 17. I said to him, "This is crazy. I don't know how you can live with negative 17 degrees. It's actually a little cool here today, and I think everybody's shivering. So I don't know, but people are funny that they can live up there. I don't know how everyone, you know, if people like everyone wants to, should come to Florida, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, again, what else? I had so many things to talk about to Dorian. So my whole mind was set on Dorian today. But, I am also going to go to the next BoucherCon. So we're going to have a little break, and then I'll come back and let's go ahead.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660. Or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and in a few minutes, I'm going to be talking to Irene Goodman, a literary agent from New York. She's going to be calling in. But meanwhile, I did want to also add to everybody, I had mentioned before a program that really is wonderful for all of you people who are writing complex books or books that have like a memoir where you have a lot of different information. Scriptr is just a wonderful program, and it's $29, so it's a wonderful thing. Okay, well, I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Irene Goodman. Hi, Irene.
Well, hello, Patsy. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, well, it wouldn't be a fourth anniversary without you, I can tell you, that's
Thank
for
you.
Sure. Wow. How are you?
I am great, thanks.
Well,
how are you?
You know, I saw that you were cold up there, and Oh, we had to turn the AC on yesterday, so it's
I know. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear
it's
too cold here.
I know.
It's too cold. It's April. I feel like time's up. That's it. It's got to warm up.
Where are the tulips, right? Yeah, it's exactly. Well, you know, I went to visit my son up in Wisconsin in Madison a few weeks ago, and it was negative 17.
Oh, God.
It was such a shock to my system. It was, you know, that's colder than my freezer. And
really?
Negative. I mean, that's cold. And there was so much snow. It was unbelievable. And it's the first time I've seen snow in 25 years.
Really?
Yes, because, you know, we lived in Texas. We lived in Florida. And the last time I went, I went skiing and I saw snow. So it's that long.
Wow.
But I don't miss it. I don't miss it, really. I don't. Wow.
I like it in the beginning. And then it's
Well, we're Michiganders, so we've seen enough snow, I think.
Oh, I remember that. I remember walking to the bus to go to high school and climbing over mountains of snow. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Now, when you arrived in New York, were you did you already have a job?
No.
No?
No. I did not. Well, at first I moved to Boston after college, and I had a job there for 2 years. And then I decided I wanted to go into book publishing, and I learned that there were only two publishers in Boston, both quite distinguished, but only two. And Boston is a town filled with young people right out of school looking for the same three jobs. So it was virtually impossible to get any kind of real job there. So I realized, okay, got to move to New York. So I did, and I moved in with my cousin, who was a musician, up all night playing the oboe, and she had an apartment on West 110th Street. And I moved in, and I had a job in about 3 weeks as an editorial assistant, and that was it. I took it from there.
And so you knew right away that you wanted to be in the book business, huh?
Pretty much. I wanted to do something that had to do with books. So in Boston, I worked at a library for a while, but that was boring. I realized, well, I don't want to do that forever. So I just kind of figured it out, and I realized, well, I have to be in New York if I'm going to do this. So I drove to New York from Boston, and here I am. Still here.
And of course, you have a wonderful agency, so well known, the Irene Goodman. I mean, you named it after yourself, after all. Irene Goodman Literary Agent.
Well, in those days, that's what everybody did. If I were starting an agency today, I would not call it that. I would call it something else, something more clever. But that was the style then. You're talking 40 years ago. So, yeah, that was the style. And so that's what everybody did.
And who was your first client?
My very first client was a very nice lady named Carol Norris. I was working for another agent, and she was his client, and she was writing historical romance. And that market was starting to boom around that time. And he really had no idea what to do with it. He was representing the likes of Stephen King and people like that. It was just not in his wheelhouse. So he gave it to me, and I started selling her books. And others came after that.
Wow. It's so exciting. I think of those days. Well, 40 years ago in New York was a very exciting time. And I like the clothes that they wore. It's so different in those days.
I don't like that era at all in terms of how it looked. But, yeah, New York was very different. New York had recently been told to drop dead by the president. So that was in headlines all over the place. And it had to be cleaned up a lot. Like, the whole Times Square area was just awful. And it was Giuliani who cleaned it up, I have to say. And, you know, things always change, but it is still the vibrant, diverse, exciting, never-know-what's-going-to-happen city that never sleeps. Exactly. That is still true.
Yeah, there is no place else like New York City. You know, when all I have to do is say, oh, she's a New York City literary agent, it's like, everything like starts sparkling around you, you know? It still has that power.
Well, but there's yes, it does, and I feel that sometimes. But there's also the reality that I grew up in Michigan. I'm a Midwesterner by birth, and I chose to come here. I chose to enter this vibrant, crazy place. And that's really all you need to do. I mean, anybody can do it. You just have to pick up and come here. And the great thing about New York is you can be a New Yorker if you've been here for 2 minutes. There are other places where if you haven't been born there, forget it. I think there was in the movie Jaws, there's some line about that. No, you're not an islander. If you weren't born here, forget it. You could never be an islander. New York, anybody can be a New Yorker. You just have to be here.
And you have to be able to walk fast through all those people in the streets. It's still when, you know, for people when they come to New York and they're not used to seeing so many people in one spot. There's this excitement, sort of a tingly excitement of seeing so many people just like all going across the street at the same time.
That's true.
It's exciting.
That is true. Well, you can always tell out-of-towners because they look up. When you live here, you just want to get where you're going, so you don't look up at the buildings.
So you've been part of a very exciting time in the publishing industry. Things have changed over the years. Now, is it true, I've heard, and people say that now agents really have to do more because in the old days, the publishers did part of the work that you are now doing?
I think there's some truth to that. We do more editing than we used to because they don't do it. They'll just not buy it. Yeah, they used to work with things more editorially. So the bar has been raised. Also, there's so much more competition for people's leisure time. You could spend all night entertaining yourself with your phone. You don't need to read a book. You don't even need to watch television, although there are 500 channels you could choose from. So that's part of it. And, of course, the Internet has changed everything. But I don't think it has really changed what people read. They just might read it on a different format. And there are still plenty of readers left in the world. It's just that there are more things to do now besides read.
Well, and I think people still love books. I was when I went on that flight, you know, to Wisconsin, I was surprised as I'm walking down the aisle how many people actually had hardback books. Mm-hmm. The two people next to me, they both had hardback books. I walked down the aisle, I see, you know, every other row, people had hardback books, not paperback books even. And some people were reading on their Kindles and like, but I was surprised how many people had hardback books with them.
Well, the mass market paperback, a rack size mat, has almost disappeared. I mean, it used to be a booming market of its own, and now it's been really cut back because people who are willing to pay $8 for a paperback book can get it on a Kindle or, you know, a device and read it that way. Those are people who tend to read a lot, actually, and it's just more convenient for them to have it on a device. But hardcover is still very much around, obviously. Some people prefer that format.
Well, Lee Child, I heard that Lee Child is selling one hardback book every 6 seconds.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like every 6 seconds. I mean, that's a lot of hardback books.
Yeah. Well, there's also original trade paper, which, for example, if you're reading something that's historical fiction or women's fiction, that might be the format you're reading. That is basically, it's a hardcover book, the size of a hardcover book, but with a paper cover. But it tends to look more upmarket than a mass market paperback.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, the formats are all still available.
Now, from the agency point of view, again, how does it work now? Where does a publicist come into the deal? Through the agent? Through the publicist? What's the dynamics on the roles that the three parts play?
The publicist?
Yeah, who?
Okay, I just want to make sure I heard you clearly.
Yeah.
Publicist.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there are two ways to have a publicist. One is the publisher will provide you with one. That person may or may not do much. If you're a very big author, then they will definitely kick in. They will do a lot. If you're not, then you're pretty much expected to do a lot of your own work. And basically that means making yourself into a presence. There's a lot of noise out there, and if you want to compete with all that noise, if you want to be noticed at all, you have to do something. So you're expected to have your own social media and to be growing it. And a lot of people hire someone to do that. It's really better if you do it yourself because people want that personal connection with the author. And you can certainly, many people will hire their own publicist to do more things for them that the publisher is not going to do. I think it's one of the biggest misconceptions that new authors have. They think, oh, the publisher will make me famous. No, it's actually the other way around. They would rather that you be famous because then you'll be a lot easier. It'll be easier to sell your books. They cannot create something from nothing. You have to bring in something with you. You have to bring in a following, a readership, a fan club, a herd. People like to use that word, a herd of people. We had an author here once. I can't even remember her name. But she started a blog about the process of becoming an author and what she was going through and hoping and praying that she would sell her first book. And this blog got a lot of followers, a lot of attention. And she did sell her first book, and there was a herd in place, all those followers she had built up who went out to buy the book in its first week, which created velocity, which is something publishers very much like to see. So if you've got to get into the game a little bit in that regard. Some people say, well, I wrote a great book, isn't that enough? Well, you know, in a fair and sane world, it ought to be. And it used to be. But today, if everybody else is out there on social media and creating a presence for themselves, then where does that leave you if you don't do it?
Now,
I hope that answers your question.
Well, the thing is, I have so many, you know, people who come in with their first novel and they go through that query letter. I'm not even going to get into that today because that's like a whole big program. But so they think that once they have an agent, especially if they have a New York City agent, how do you get them a deal? We still read about recently, Writer's Digest, who got a seven-figure deal? The name I can't remember right now, but somebody just got a seven-figure deal, which really sounds great, doesn't it? Is the agent very happy when you get a seven-figure deal? Are you like you're having a party?
If you get a seven-figure deal for a first book, then yes, of course you would be happy. But the truth is, I think what makes us the happiest is not the money, it's the achievement. And that's a different thing. To get in a novel that you really believe in and understand that it's a big deal and have an auction where there's a lot of action and people get in on it, that's something that you made happen. And the better deal you get for it, the prouder you are of that. And then at some point it occurs to you to sit down and count the money. Oh, look, I made money here. That's cool. But when you're in the middle of doing it, this really, you're not thinking about your own money. You're thinking about the quality of the deal that you are making and doing it in a way that is fair to everybody, and obviously in a way where you get the best deal. So there are strategies involved, and you have to keep your cool, and you have to have your ducks in a row and think about a lot of different things. Then when it's over, sometimes some of us here will experience a down. Like, oh, I could have done better. Oh, why didn't I think of that thing or, you know, whatever. And then about 2 weeks after that, you say, wait a minute, I did great here. That was good. And the author's happy. Everybody's happy. But, you know, this is our job. And we want to be proud of the work that we do. So it's not all sitting around, you know, the king was in his county house counting out his money. That's not all that we do.
Now, on from the agent point of view, on the publisher side, who's the person you deal with on the publisher side? It's a, what do they call that person who buys the books? The buyer? What?
Well, usually it's an editor.
An editor.
An editor buys the book. Sometimes we may go to the publisher directly if it's something very big or something that we know they might be personally interested in, but almost always it's an editor.
So what's the basic problem? You get a book from an author, you like it, you work with the author, what, to get it just all sort of spiffed up and shiny and ready to go?
Usually, yeah, I might want to format it a little more appropriately. Hopefully it won't need a lot of work. I don't actually like to do that much editorial. Nobody does. It's very time-consuming. If it's something where I know exactly what to do to make it saleable, then I will do it. If it's just, well, it isn't very good and I'm not sure what to do, then I'm not going to bother.
So essentially, you want something to arrive to you as perfect as possible.
Of course,
and
yeah,
then
of course
something you don't have to say. Okay, you never like suggest to people to change a point of view or anything like that.
Oh, that would be huge, changing a point of view. No, but as I said, if there's one thing that's easily fixable that I know will make it more saleable, then that's okay if it's easily done and if the author agrees to do it.
And then it goes to the editor, and nowadays...
Well, then I send it to more than one editor.
Hoping for an auction.
Well, we're hoping for a sale, but it only takes one to have a sale, and it only takes two to have an auction. So, you know, it's always nice when you have more than one offer. It's much easier. But we are professionals, and if we only get the one, we know how to work it. We know there are things we can do to improve it and make it as good as it can be. And eventually somebody either wins the auction or buys the book, and somebody buys it eventually, or not. I mean, people have to realize that, too. There's always the one that got away. We don't sell 100% of what we send out. We would like that, but and there's no agent in the world who can boast that kind of track record. Then the editor buys it, and then it goes through the entire production process at the publisher, which means that the editor edits the book. They don't do near as much as they used to, but they do some. And then it goes to the copy editor, and it goes through the entire process. The cover has to be designed. If the agent is any good at all, the offer will have some kind of cover consultation or approval. And so that has to happen. A lot of emails back and forth with various cover designs. And at some point, the publicity process has to start. It depends how far away the publication date is. But certainly, 6 months before you want to be thinking about it, and 3 months before you really have to be thinking about it. And again, it depends on how important the book is to them and how much they're going to do. And the author has to be very smart and very savvy about what they're going to do. There's a great deal they can and should do, but there are other things that are very expensive that I would not advise them to do. Because they'll just be spending a lot of money, and there's no guarantee that it's going to do anything.
Well, all in all, I think you have one of the most exciting jobs in the world. I mean, first, you just get to read books, and I love to read books before everybody else. This is one of the joys of having this program. I get books, you know, months in advance before everybody. I will have like a Margaret George book, you know, 6 months before anybody else, and I'm saying, I've read that book.
You get true. Well, these are published books or about to be published.
About to be, yeah. But it's so exciting.
No, you don't know what it's like to have to read slush, unsolicited manuscripts that come in that need to be looked at. Usually it's a query letter. Each of us here gets approximately 10 a day, and that's more than we can handle, which means we're always behind. We do try to look at it, but...
Well, I know you have, I've of course, interviewed Barbara Powell and Miriam Chris, two of your agents, fantastic.
Right.
And, as I've told you before, whenever you have a book and an author who wants to come on Joy on Paper, send them my way, because I love to interview your clients. And people can go to your website. I want to mention before we leave that you do a charity auction. And it's just a wonderful opportunity for an author to get a real serious critique. And all the money goes to charity, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so where do they...
They should just look on our website on the home page. If you scroll down, there's a place you can click, and that will take you right to the auction page. And that's all you need to do. And you will get a personal critique written by me. I read every word, and I write every word of the critique coming from me.
Well, I can tell.
Kathy, before we go, do I get to plug something?
Sure.
I want to plug my big book that's coming out in just a few months. It's by Linda Lale Miller, and it's called The Yankee Widow. And it is a hardcover novel, a brilliant historical novel. It takes place during the Civil War in Gettysburg. And it's about what happens not just on the battlefield, but on the home front, what people are going through during that war. Basically, the way the author puts it, the men made a mess and the women had to clean it up.
Well, she's already on my schedule, you know. I already put it down on my calendar.
Good. Well, then I won't say any more.
Okay. I love her writing, so I'm eagerly looking for it. Anyway, I want to thank you, Irene Goodman, so much for being on Joy on Paper. You were my first guest, and I just want to thank you so much for everything you've done for me.
Well, you are very welcome, and it's always a pleasure to be on.
Okay. Thanks, Irene. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye, Patsy.
Wow, that's nice. Okay. Well, it turned out to be a wonderful day. I got to hear a lot of Debbie Reynolds music, and that's always wonderful. And actually, Good Morning is on my playlist. I listen to it every morning. I have now 10 songs on my playlist that I listen to almost every day, and that's one of them. So remember what I say. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're lucky, to have those magic words said, lights, camera, action, and your book is turned into a film or a streaming video or perhaps a television series like on Hallmark for Carol J. Perry. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. Wow, it's been an exciting 4 years. And again, thank you all. And my website is radio-joyonpaper. Go there and put in a question for Bill Larson. He'll be here next week. Bye-bye now.